Okay, it is the top of the hour, so welcome to Prime Time for documentation tutorials and questions about NEOS. Please drop your questions in the office hours chat, and we'll get to them as soon as we can. I don't see any questions right now, so until there are questions appearing, I don't know. That monkey with the clapping cymbals, yes. Yes, until there are questions. Sorry, I don't answer cheese questions. Just questions about NEOS. Just makes things easier. Yeah. I will answer that one. I will. Jamikar asks how my day has been. Good, yes, I have consumed way too much caffeine. I don't remember eating lunch, so I'll probably sort that out after this. It's also warming up a bit, which is great. I'm not looking forward to the summer, where it's going to be sort of air conditioning hell, but we're a little bit away from that just right now, so still cold sometimes. Okay, next question, which is from Gun Griffin, which says, what point does the world preview get rendered from? World preview systems are very complicated depending on what the setup in the world is. Assuming a default world, it will get rendered randomly based on the geographic position of players within there. Essentially, periodically, I don't know the period, I think it's like every couple of minutes, maybe every minute. I don't know the answer to that one. Every computer that is connected to NEOS, a NEOS session, will take a photo of the perspective of that user. And then there is sort of like a negotiation or exchange process that goes between the users in the session to figure out, hey, which is the most up-to-date thumbnail or session preview, etc. And then that most up-to-date one will then be shared with the actual systems that run our sessions, etc. And that's the one you see. You can check more out there. If you've got any of the components which are enabled, etc., then it will vary. The listing is right there for what they will do. Moving onwards to the next question here, which says, is there work being done on NEOS during this time? Yeah, we're doing a few things. We don't really have much to share about what we're doing or who we're doing it, but like, I got lots of stuff happening. Occasionally I edit the code, add stuff. The next update should have like a ton of Prime stuff. Basically, it's cool. So you'll see. Like, the roadmap is still up to date. If the roadmap wasn't up to date, I would update it. Trust me. But other than that, yeah, we're doing as much stuff as we can. Yeah, that's all the questions I have currently. Yeah, you won't see much updates. We're not releasing updates right now. We are doing stuff and the roadmap's up to date, but we're not releasing updates. I get it, it's confusing, etc., but like, remember, the roadmap's up to date. So like, look at the roadmap and imagine us doing stuff. Hodu asks, what is Prime stuff? Some quality of life improvements, like for example getting the active slot from the collider much easier than it is currently. Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff in devlog which I've been posting. There's random other stuff which is like things along the lines of like, I got annoyed so I implemented it. They're a little bit difficult to describe. I'd have to go take a look at what's actually made it in, then see which ones are still pending, and then we'll see what's going on there. Count occurrences was in devlog. The collidery doodad, the grabber doodad was in devlog. There's another one I can't remember, but yeah, a bunch of other random stuff is happening. You can see what I'm working on generically by the assigned issues. If you go to the issue list and you look at sort of assigned to Prime, those are the sort of things I'm dabbling in when I get time. So Rubix asks, when collections will be implemented, we don't give ETAs, check the roadmap for information on collections and when that might happen. Crying asks, where approximately on the priority list is a FTT, or something that could enable Fourier analysis transforms. So if you check and look in Devlog, Gaines did take a look at making FTT and got things working. I don't think that aligned to some sort of architectural problems that we had in NEOS. So we might have to redo that one. So take a look in the on the roadmap. We don't really have an NTA on when that would occur. I know it looks cool to see it working in the game, but there's a difference from working in the game as a quick sort of hacky project compared to working in the game, something that can actually be released. It's very difficult to unrelease stuff, so that's why we try and make sure everything's cool, secure, update, future-proofed, etc. before we actually release it. That was actually a large problem with the count occurrences node. I wrote that thing like 3 times because the particular way that we were counting the occurrences in a string could have been problematic, but then we made it a different way that was slightly less problematic. And then we just went ahead and benchmarked all of them and found a way that is something like 200 times faster than the previous 3 ways I was doing it. Always fun. Especially when you're reading the C# source. I don't really know why we did that. We just did. Sometimes we do that. If you know, too long didn't read on that is check the roadmap. I know it doesn't look like it's moving, but the thing that you need to remember is that even if a roadmap is not moving, it still represents work that is occurring. So it's sometimes normal to not see it moving because work is still occurring. It's not like work is not occurring. Work is occurring. It just, there's nothing we can share, really. Moving onwards from Nessie, we have a question here from Nessie, which says, is there anything good you can say about the unfolding situation with NCR? There are good things to say, but you can't come up with this time to understand. Sorry for the NCR focus. I supported NEOS since before Crypto Brews New existed, but I'm, of course, highly impacted by the situation. Would like to see some better integration and use of the marketplace job system. Everything I have to say on that matter is in the announcements channel. There is nothing else I can say about that. Check the announcements channel. Stance, etc. They're on in the announcements channel. That's a slightly different question from Crying Surrogate. They're asking about buying storage. You can still subscribe to the Patreon. Like, I know, like, everyone's like, don't, blah, 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 blah. Like, the things that from the Patreon that are still going towards stuff that you need still exist, though. Some portion of the Patreon goes to paying for our services. Those services that are paid for then pay for your storage, hence why we give you storage when you become a Patreon. So don't cancel it if you need storage, just drop it down or stuff like that. And then that way you'll get the storage that you actually need. You'll still show your opinion by dropping the Patreon, but you won't be outright losing your access to storage. Next on the list of questions we have, Crying says Patreon's not an option right now. Yep, then your only option is approaching the NCR right now. I apologize. Just way it is. We are interested in additional ways of gaining storage in the future. Things like a permanent increase maybe costing a certain amount of money or stuff like that. But right now those are the only 2 options that we have for storage. If you have any particular ideas about additional storage ideas, open up a GitHub for your idea that you have. I don't know. Maybe if we send Prime Cheese, he'll give you storage. Who knows? Moving onwards, Gun Griffin asks, what's the general rule of thumb for user count when hosting based on your internet upload speed? There isn't a general rule because it means it's based on like a lot of things. Like people imagine it as being sort of a hard and fast rule. The same thing goes with like system requirements, right? It depends on what you're doing, who you are, what the other people are doing, what their computers are like, what their internet connection is like, where they are, all sorts of stuff like that. You need to sort of factor that all in together. You can measure the data requirements of an individual user and then extrapolate from that. But I just don't give recommendations on that. I'm like, the question is too vague. Like, what do you want? Hack13 asks, is there any news progress on the switch to auth version of the NIOS web login auth system? That's a bit of a sort of word soup question. I'll try and extrapolate an answer, though. That is on pause whilst we deal with website-related issues. Sort of see announcements on that one. We need to basically rewrite 90 to 95% of the website to use the new systems and then actually get some like useful functionality in place. We don't have any useful functionality there. You can get like the profile data via OAuth, but you can't get like anything else like friends, etc., stuff like that from the OAuth land. And that's just because we need to rewrite most of the web APIs to then use that new process. Hackers just updated things to say resetting password. Resetting password, that can be done via any place. It'll do it exactly the same. You don't necessarily need it from the new system. You can use the old system. It's entirely up to you. Doesn't matter either way. If you wanted to reset your password another way, do let me know or extrapolate on your actual problem. On the old one? Oh no, I'd have to double check. I'm sure you can do it on the old one though. Moving forwards to Alpha, I'll be your hack. Moving forwards to Sveken, who says, what part of the snapper does the actual thinking? I.e., does a snapper check for snap targets, or does the snap targets check if snappers are inside the collider? And do a lot of snap targets cause performance hit? Neither part does the thinking. So anything related to snappers snapping and grabbable receivers, surfaces, stuff like that, is actually performed by the grabber. So if you think about grabbing something, there is always an active user that is grabbing that because you're holding it. When you drop something in the world, when you let go of it, that's what does the snapper thinking. So I am holding a snappable object near its snap target. When I let go of that, the code which handles the letting go of it will go, cool, I have snapper components. I will do a physics calculation to figure out if I'm colliding with an appropriately configured snap target, and then I will snap into it. Once it's figured out if there is a snap target in place and that the object that you're dropping is a snapper, it will instruct the snapper to do its job. But again, the predominant thinking is via the grabbable. As for the performance problems or questions that you have, no, or not really in like general use case. I can't think of many cases where you'd need like hundreds of snappers in existence. There might be some sort of like, I don't know, puzzle game style stuff, but it's totally fine. You got to remember when it comes to physics calculations, just use them. I hate people who are like, I'm going to use manual mathematics rather than physics. It's like, why? Like, just like the physics is already doing the manual mathematics for you. They're like, yeah, active colliders are bad. And yes, active colliders are quite inherently bad, but use them correctly, they're great. And so the same thing goes with the grabbable physics calculations, especially seeing as those are out of the way of you, like you can't influence them. Those exist in code within our engine that you can't change, right? You know, if there was a performance problem with snappers or grabbables, we'd fix it. It's totally fine. If it's just hats, scarves, you know, bracelets, whatever you want to snap to your avatar, you're totally fine. If you've got a lot of snappables in the same location, hey, maybe that'll be a problem, but like that's really only going to come up in exact places, probably games. Puzzle games will probably come up with occasionally. I'm not too worried about that. You'd experience that in your individual experience that you're crafting. Hodu asks, what is the importance of being able to have a local storage that if you want to save an item, I can save it to a local inventory instead of my local home branch of objects. Are you asking me what I think the importance is? Are you asking where it's ranked on our priority list? Are you asking, are we thinking about it? Like, what's your question? It is considered. You can find a GitHub issue for it. I won't be able to pull that out of my head. It's not in there. But there is some area where we're thinking about it to enable it as another storage option. There's another one of the storage options. I mean, like, you know, we are looking at other ways that we can provide storage to people on various types and platforms and things like that. It is on the list. I would not be able to comment on the priority. I don't know. We don't give ETAs. Check the roadmap for more information. If you like that feature, remember to thumbs up it on the GitHub and to vote on it using your Patreon priority voting rights. Moving onwards to Gun Griffin's question. Do you know what single-threaded bottlenecks might be in the engine? Do you have any ideas on how to improve them? There's lots of areas that Frux is aware of that need to be improved. There are also lots of areas that Geens is aware that need to be improved. The single greatest improvement that we can have right now is moving off of Unity. So that's really what Geens is trying to sort of like focus on. That's why you'll see stuff happening that isn't sort of like a weird or seemingly random order on Geens' land, right? Geens wants to get colors under control, such that we can start moving to better systems. Like, that's something that we would need before we start moving to better systems, is to understand the color spaces of all of the content on there, or it's going to start looking really weird when we have to jump to different rendering engines. Beyond that, the other cause of you know, problem was that BEPU 1 physics, so we updated to BEPU 2. There are a bunch of other cases which come up which don't seem like they would. Like, any old UI that's using the old UI system isn't really designed for expandability, scale, or anything like that, so that can be a problem. I do believe as well, from speaking to Frux, that there are some advancements that he wants to make to the dynamic bone system to make that a little bit more performant. If you really want to know more performance-related stuff, I would probably head on over to Geens. I know they're currently not doing office hours. Actually, it removed them from the active list on the office hours wiki page, but there'd be a better sort of ask about the general performance of the engine. We do also have an optimization roadmap, which has a lot of stuff like pinned in there and listed on there. I know there's another one sort of in the areas of web requests where we want to move a lot more stuff to SignalR such that we can not have to poll. Like, right now we do a lot of polling, which is basically like every couple of seconds or however long it is. It's probably like every 30 seconds for some cases. It just depends on what operation it is. We have to like knock at the door of Neos' cloud services and say, "Yo, got anything new? Yo, got anything new?" When that drops over to SignalR, we don't have to do that. Moving onwards to Luca's question. Regards to headless and storage, will there be a way for those headless systems at some point to have their own cache for content, tools, etc., where if you're on a LAN with no internet connectivity, you'll still be able to show off a game, movie, tools, and be able to have all users access the locally hosted store? Already exists. There's just a lot of limitations. So if you have everything that you need stored inside the local home or a world which is saved to the local home, then you don't need internet. I already use that with a bunch of the scientific projects I'm working on. It works well. You just frequently need to update what you need access to. For example, the T4 avatar unfortunately doesn't work if you're offline, or at least it didn't the last time I was testing it. I did make a GitHub about it. And it is something I'm looking into because I don't think that that's acceptable. It makes me sort of angry that that is the case. So to fix that, what I did with the local world content is I just shoved the default avatar into one of those worlds, hit save, set it up in the user spawner such that it uses that one, not the cloud spawned one, and then it does work whilst offline. You just need to make sure that everything is saved there. Better management of local storage will enable better handling there, as well better management for sort of offline saved stuff that can't work without internet. It is possible right now. I do it regularly. Messi asks, if my Patreon subscription currently gets me a creation group, what happens to the group's world, group's folder, and other things if I were to decrease my Patreon level to which it does not include the group? We will never delete content. We don't want to do that. We don't believe in that. So if you get a group which has a certain file storage size and you stop paying for Patreon, we will allow you to still have that content. You won't be able to save any new content to that group, but any existing content will not be deleted. That includes your group world and group inventory folders. So the group will still exist. It'll kind of just be like, I'll use like air quotes here on the camera, you know, like locked. You can't do anything with it. Like, it'll still exist, but you can't really do much with it. Sharkmare asks, or states really, I haven't really looked into Signalar as a kind of event-based system. Yeah, if you're familiar with any other event-based system, even as simple as basically just sort of like Discord, what we're using here, right? There is a data layer that sends messages between people and lets them know that there's stuff there. Like my first exposure to that when I was learning computing was IRC, right? You connect to a data channel and it sends data to you. Another good example would be the difference between WebSockets and just regular like web requests. Signalar is allowing us to send a message to you like, hey, I have new stuff. Rather than you knocking at our door saying, do you have new stuff? We send a message to you saying, I have new stuff, here it is. And that way you don't need to poll. It is more optimal in a lot of cases. Hack13 said, I heard before there was throttling to the SS server if you're doing a Patreon. If this is true, what is the throttling? That's not true anymore. If you heard it somewhere, please let me know and delete it if applicable. It does not occur anymore. I removed it from the wiki. I've talked about it before. It does not occur. We removed that perk and moved everyone to the same sort of transmitting for assets. There's no throttling. There was no throttling to begin with. It was just historically, not now, historically, that we had a slightly faster CDN for Patreon users. So downloads were slightly faster. It wasn't throttling. It was the opposite. We gave more speed to people that had Patreon. I don't think we'd ever throttle your content. That's ridiculous. Nessie has a follow-up question on their group question, which is, and it will be there if I increase it back. The group will never be deleted. You'll still be able to access it. You just won't be able to save anything new to it. So it'll still be in your inventory system. You'll still be open the group world. You just won't be able to save things. So yes. And then if you increase your pledge back to support that, then you'll be able to save stuff again. So it's like read-only, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. Sorry has a question, and they say, this is on the fly, so forgive me. Are there plans to implement some kind of cache delay Atlas? I presume you mean Atlas. Stuff in the cache that is older than X days to combat the whole full drive problem. Yeah, we have better cache management on an issue to enable you to sort of say what's going on. Optimizations in the way that we store cache items there will also help, but I think it'll be a lot more important to sort of give you the control there. What I would love is some sort of setting, UI, something somewhere that basically says like, hey, here is a limit that Neos, don't go over this damn limit. And then based on that, it won't like, it won't go over that limit, or maybe it'll delete stuff that's older. That is cool, sort of better cache management, is I guess what you'll be searching for on the GitHub. That's all the questions I have currently. I'm going to go ahead and in the interspersed time between looking for more questions, I'm going to go ahead and take a look at that whole forgot password problem. Thought there was a way to do it on the old site. Looks like there is not a way to do it on the old site. Account.neos.com should be able to enable you to reset your password. Not account.neos.com. Auth.neos.com. Sorry, there's like three different websites. Yes, auth.neos.com. It will enable you to reset your password. Hack asks, can you allocate your personal space to the group? No. Groups have a different space limit than you. You cannot move space between them. You can, however, allocate how much space individual users can take up within that group storage. But that's like the other way around. That's not exactly what you're asking. Hack asks, will there be a way to grow strict pay for more group storage in the future? Yes, I would love to see groups being like entirely overhauled to be a thing that A, doesn't require Shifty's help. She's amazing, but like she has other responsibilities and I would love her to be able to focus on those. There's no reason we can't automate group creation. Very easy. I would love it if we, you know, could just make groups more feel like a group. You know, there should be some sort of sense of community about that group, some sort of sense of identity about that group, and then features, etc., that will allow that. Maybe contributing to a group, stuff like that. Absolutely. We have another question here. Sorry, I had to type something, so I was just alt-tabbed around a little bit. So we have a question here from Gun Griffin, which says, is it better to have accessories or different avatar items as a separate mesh with a few weight groups or in the same skin mesh with all the bone weights? Split up your skin meshes as much as possible, particularly if there's no deformation. A good example here, and this is like hyper-optimization, so don't panic if you're not this case. If you have no body blend shapes, then split your head off from your body. And that will provide a little bit more optimization to your avatar because the blend shape groups and listings will only exist for your actual head and not the rest of your body. And then we'll be able to sort of optimize the body a little bit better. When it comes to accessories and stuff like that, if that accessory is designed to always be there, I don't know, it's a hat or a scarf that's always part of the avatar, sure, make it the same mesh, sure, join it together, sure, optimize it with the same materials, etc. If you ever want to take it off, it needs to be a separate mesh. That's basically it, really. You could optimize to hell. Like one of my avatars has one material, one skinned mesh, baked blend shapes, and you wouldn't know it. Another one doesn't, and in some cases you wouldn't know it because I'm not extreme with my unoptimization. Best things that you can do are to just assume that you are like plan out the avatar is what I mean. Like sometimes the problems of optimization are not planning. You know, you import the avatar and then like 5 minutes after importing the avatar, you're like, well, I actually need like a hat and 50,000 multi-tools inside my inside my belt. And I need four copies of Ryuvi's Edge of Reality doodad inside my belt. And, you know, I need half of Sketchfab parented to me. That's absolutely amazing what I want. Oh, yeah, you should always zero clear out weight groups that aren't meant to be there. That's just good practice in, like, making the avatar in general. I just do that in principle, though, because like sometimes when the auto-normalization of weight painting is happening, you end up with like some fun stuff there. Crying Surrogate has a question here, which is, do default Do default tooltips contribute to avatar asset size? No. The way that the size is displayed in the inventory screen isn't that accurate. But a good way of looking at it is to think about a manifest of your avatar. So this is going to be quoted, I know. Think of your avatar like it's an airplane, okay? The mesh of the airplanes, the outer like holes of the airplane, That's a mesh, right? So that's a separate asset. So its file size is then added to maybe the mesh of the inside of the airplane, the seats. That's a separate asset. And then the textures on that plane, both on the outside and the inside, that's a separate asset. And then add those all together up, and then you get the size of the final avatar. Airplane's actually a good thing for this next part, though. If your asset is shared with another user or any of the standard assets, then the first person to upload it will have the file size allocated to them. As an example here, which happens a lot with avatar bases, if you use the identical avatar base to someone who uploaded the avatar and made it into an avatar, as in if someone gives you their avatar base and you just change out the textures, I don't know, your friend is a red dog, you're a blue dog. If they uploaded the red dog and did the avatar setup process, and the meshes are identical, so it uses the same mesh, the only change is that you change your textures to be a blue dog, then they will have the file size allocated for the mesh. You will just have the file space allocated for the blue dog texture. Yeah, everything's separated. It just manifests everything out. Like, everything's manifested. So if you are looking at any asset, just explode it. Imagine it explode. Don't imagine planes exploding, but imagine it exploding into all its component parts, and those are all saved separately. Every static mesh, every static texture, all saved separately. If there are overlaps, which is probably a better wording for what I was saying earlier, rather than talking about planes and dogs, then everything is everything that is unique to you is allocated to your size. Grun asks, if they deleted their copy, do you inherit the file size? I think so. I don't know. I'd have to like poke around a little bit. It is a like really wishy-washy on how that whole system works, particularly in cases where it's assets that are in public folders and things like that, or assets that are sort of shared around a lot. It gets to the point where we have a direct sort of incentive from us as a company to keep assets around. If it's just you, it's your special avatar, and you decide to leave the platform, fine, okay, you leave the platform, we delete that. We actually delete that. But in some cases, it's like, well, this is in like 5 shared folders. This meme has been shared around to like 20 different people. We have no real idea who the original owner is, but someone just deleted it. Like, do we actually delete it? No, of course not. It's really complicated. The license system will help with that, as we'll be able to see the originator of the asset, both in terms of sort of like when to delete something, the path, the trajectory of something, who owned it, why they owned it, and stuff like that. And also to sort of handle and maybe optimize file storage in some cases. Going back to that plane analogy for a bit, everything about the passengers, that's unique to them, but the plane, pretty stock standard. You know, one 747 for one airline is identical to another 747 for an airline when it comes to digitalness, not in reality. We are over time at this point, so Gun Griffin and Fuzzy, if you have a question, please enter them. If you don't, that's totally fine. Fuzzy, I would encourage you to use the inventory system. We get this a lot, and this is something that I try to explain to people, and they don't understand, or they, you know, they're like, "Ah, you're being difficult." I'm like, I'm not. I'm just explaining to you why there's an inventory system. So, you come to Neos, you're new, and you're like, cool, it's an inventory system. I can put stuff in my inventory. I can save it. That's great. And at a certain point, you start parenting stuff to your avatar and stop using the inventory system. I need a gun. I'll parent it to my avatar. I need a different gun. I'll parent it to my avatar. And I'm like, or pop open your inventory and spawn the gun you need at the time you need it. Stop laboring yourself. You don't have to walk around like it's Fallout 4 and you've got like 5,000 years of what are they called? Radroach like legs in your inventory, and you know, trying to like just like leave it in your inventory. I want a blue version of my avatar, so I will do this complicated logic setup so that my avatar can be blue. Maybe just save a blue copy of your avatar and then swap into it when you want to be blue. That will lead to a lot more sort of betterness. That also goes on to the question, which I didn't answer. I apologize, I missed it. I don't have a helpful person ticking and marking questions today, which is... actually, I missed two questions. So I'm so sorry. I'll jump through those real quick. Cesari asks, what's the worst crimes that you've seen done in Logic so far that made you just not deal with it? It's honestly monopacking. It takes the whole concept of like logics and the engine and everything like that and just like laughs at it. Like, there is nothing we can do as like a team to convince you not to do that, but there's also nothing we can do as a team to undo that or optimize it for you in the future. Let's say, for example, we like completely reverse engineer, make logics better. If it's all regular logics, we do it all the time. Like, we update nodes, we change how they work, we make them more efficient. And it's so easy for us to update them because all those nodes are separate and they make sense. But if you sort of just like remove all the crap and shoehorn it down into one object, it becomes invisible to us. I'm onto that one next. It becomes invisible to us, right? We can't do anything to it. We can't help you improve it. It's just like it's just there and it's a mess and it's going to be a mess for the rest of time. Don't monopack. If you're like, slots are problematic, tell us that slots are problematic. We'll optimize slots for you. On to that last question. Is there a better way to move several items into nested folders? No. Currently, no. Better inventory management is also on our roadmap. We want to get to the place where it operates more like a sort of, you know, Windows file manager or whatever your favorite is, where you can drag and drop items and move them around and all sorts of stuff like that. I had a huge rant previous few weeks about how drag and drop is a bad user experience, and lots of people disagree with me. That's totally fine. Drag and drop is terrible, especially in VR. So there will be some experience that allows you to do the equivalent of dragging and dropping. It may be dragging and dropping if I get my way or manage to explain to people what I'm talking about instead of just rambling at them. Then there will be opportunities that do not involve the direct drag and dropping mechanism, because it's a terrible experience in VR. But we will see. Yes, inventory search is also included in that. With that, I believe we're out of questions. If you have any follow-up questions, please feel free to drop them into my DMs, etc. And I will get back to you as soon as I can with more office hours. Expect this to be up on Sounder shortly. And if you have any questions, like I said, just let me know. I'll get back to you. Bye-bye.